We are going to do something that could be just slightly awkward, and we're going to transition to sharing with you from a Missouri Baptist Convention perspective how we're trying to answer these questions. I think Ed was just kind of putting his thumb down again on this can all be theoretical, and it's great theory, isn't it? But it wasn't intended to be theory. It's intended to be practiced. And under Dr. Yates's leadership, I'm thrilled and privileged to get to serve in the capacity that I do. And over the course of the last couple of years, you have begun to hear, if you have been around or read The Pathway or been to the annual meeting or heard him speak, about the reorientation that has taken place at the Missouri Baptist Convention. I don't think it's an overreach. I guess if it is, Dr. Yates can come grab the microphone. And I'll go to dinner early. But I don't think it's an overreach to say that the things that we're talking about here, we've been talking about for a couple of years, knowing that that reorientation for us is not just a word about rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. It is an exercise in taking a hard look at how we're going about cooperating together to achieve the mission that Jesus has left to all of us. And how do we do that? And so I've invited, one of the things we're working to a great degree on is even amongst your Missouri Baptist Convention staff, how do we work together better in doing that? We've coined the phrase and been using the phrase for a couple of years now, talking about fierce collaboration. I don't know if you struggle inside of the organization or the church that you serve with getting people to work together very well. Southern Baptist, we're notorious for being folks who are very given to talking about the cooperative program and using words like cooperation. Yet when it comes right down to it, it's really difficult and messy, isn't it? To work together with other people, especially when they don't agree with you and you're right. It's really hard to work with those kinds of people. Nevertheless, this is who we are and have historically been as a people. And so I'm going to take just a few minutes, and Rick Hedger, who is a catalyst for multiplying churches, and Jim Mislosky, who maybe you haven't even had a chance to meet yet. That's because he came to the Missouri Baptist Convention and we stuck him in a hole in the basement and said, come out when you figure it out, who is now our catalyst for developing leaders, are going to come and join me. And we want to take just a few minutes to try and explain to you what we think the roles are and to ask a couple of questions. And then that's going to lead us to doing something that may seem contradictory, what we want to be doing as a convention staff in support of the work that's going on all over the state is providing resources to that degree. So, very ominously, here they stand. And maybe you should clap for them or something, I don't know. we're clapping because you made it to the stage. I think to put, if I can, I want to put Jim on the spot right away, because nobody knows what he's doing yet. And Jim has stepped into a role where he's trying to figure that out and get the lay of the land and move forward. Jim, do you maybe want to get us started by just telling us at this stage of the game, what do you see happening in the realm of developing leaders, or what is your take on our work together to transform lives and communities with the gospel, this message that we're talking about? What does that look like from your perspective?
So this is me crawling out of my hole in the basement.
I don't know where that came from. I apologize. I'm so sorry.
I haven't figured that out totally, but totally enjoying the fierce collaboration that we're doing. Obviously, in developing leaders, I'm one of those guys that would say everybody is a leader, because we all lead in some arena. The hardest person that we'll ever lead is ourselves. So self-leadership is the first place where we lead. And that's a place where we grow. The second arena is one-on-one leadership. If we're called to be disciples, then we need to lead another person in the same faith that we've been led into. And obviously, if you're a team or group leader, that's another level of organizational leadership. And then if you're leading an organization, that's another level of leadership. as we work together, obviously in those first two levels, self-leadership and one-on-one leadership, those are both required for making disciples. And so that's a part where we start working together at that point. And then to multiply a church, you need both of those kind of leadership skills, and you need to know how to lead a team and an organization. And so I think it's a very seamless way that we're going to be working together. But as it comes to that, you know, everybody comes to me in this new role and says, I get making disciples, I get multiplying churches, but what does it look like to do developing leaders? And I always answer that by saying, I think so many of us as leaders think that getting better as a leader, growing as a leader, has to do with learning to do more things better. And maturity as a leader, maturity as a Christian, is learning to become more and more dependent on the Lord and his abilities, and to trust the people he's put around us, to trust his abilities in them, and to be less and less dependent on our own abilities. And that's really where I see us moving and working in leader development in every area.
Rick, you want to answer that same question from the... You guys just pass the mic back and forth. I'll hold this one the whole time.
We'll be glad to do that. You can stay selfish, Matt. It is a joy being a missionary, and that's what I am. When God first did a work in my life and turned my heart toward him back in January 1978, and yes, today is my birthday, and I'm 60 years old, so that was many decades ago. God just stirred my heart. When Missouri Baptist was involved in helping start new churches in Iowa, there are three churches in Iowa now, because my heart was stirred because Missouri Baptist, I was just a youth pastor, but I wanted to take our youth to get to Iowa to be a part of the kingdom building process of making disciples and starting new churches, multiplying churches. And so that's how my life began. And so then as a pastor, it just moved more and more into that process in Southwest Missouri, pastoring Calvary Baptist in Neosho, when we discovered there were Micronesian Islanders playing softball on our softball field, and people wanted me as pastor to go out and tell them it's Sunday morning church. They need to not play out here on Sunday morning church. I said, no, you need to go out where you belong and make friends with them and begin to share Christ with them even on Sunday morning. And so what we began to find out is we were able to start an Hispanic congregation in our church, Bible study with Micronesian Islanders through our association, and a Hmong congregation. There are pockets of people all over Missouri, not just in St. Louis, not just in Kansas City, yes, in Jefferson City, yes, in Southwest Missouri, yes, where you are. And the multiplying churches process as a missionary is discovering where those pockets of people are, being able to exegete those pockets of people so that you know these are the people who are here. This is how their language speaks. This is how they're going to understand the gospel. This is how you're going to need to share the gospel with them and communicate with our associations and with our churches. So not just in the major cities, but all over the state of Missouri, our 6+ million people have a chance to hear the gospel. Multiplying churches begins with multiplying disciples and beginning the process of us getting a DNA to help our churches reproduce those multiplying multipliers that they send them out from our church, and our DNA gets in them and it reproduces. Because the scripture tells us in Psalm 22, just read it again this week, there's a generation yet unborn who has to hear. And if we don't get out from ourselves, we'll never be ready for them to come.
And I graciously appreciated your comment earlier. I defer to my elder. Rick, I would like to mention, as I was a young RA boy, was my RA leader a long time ago. And so I always want to respect, especially people who are a lot older than me. Is that That's an inside thought. That's an inside thought that came out. You know, honestly, that's really true. I should say, one of the things that I heard whenever we knew that Jim was coming to Missouri, I heard this repeatedly. I don't think I've ever told you this. But many people said, he is the nicest guy you're ever going to meet, which I took a little personally because that meant I wasn't in their estimation. But that is, his reputation preceded him, and that is absolutely the case. One of the most gracious, kind, encouraging guys I've ever had a chance to be around. I'm encouraged by that. Of course, Rick and I, we do actually go way back. I tease, but I have a tremendous amount of respect and admiration for him, realizing that this is being live streamed, and some of you don't know that. So I just totally look like a jerk. Sorry about that. I hope that you hear that there's a theme here, and one of the things that we have actually been doing is meeting together and talking together, which I know you would think this is happening all the time, and it should be, but have you ever been a part of an organization where you're just, everybody has so many things to do, they don't ever talk to each other? You ever been in that kind of cycle? And it seems like nobody's really connected together. I have been, and thankfully, over the course of the last several weeks, months, really, since Jim's come on board, we've been spending time together. And at the core of, and I won't take a lot of time to talk about it from my perspective because you're going to hear it as a result of the Great Commission Conference, but the thing that we are centering on and we're talking about and that there's lots of overlap in fact, maybe they just lay on top of each other. They're not three concentric circles or a Venn diagram. They're actually stacked on top of each other, building on the core mission of making disciples. This is who we are as a people. This is the mission. And if that doesn't result in the multiplication of churches, then we're not making disciples. And if it doesn't result in the development of other people who are in turn making disciples, who are making disciples, then we're not developing leaders. But I think we would all say we believe if we're making disciples, we ought to be developing leaders. If we're making disciples, we ought to be multiplying churches. And so that's how all of this kind of fits together. Rick, I asked these guys just a couple of things that were pressing on them. And I know that a part of moving the Great Commission Conference from the Evangelism Conference to a weekend like this was in an attempt to try and help us connect with bivocational volunteer folks who couldn't get away midweek or be a part of something like this in the past. And you mentioned while you were talking the fact that we're not just talking about St. Louis and Kansas City and, you know, Springfield or the metro areas. What about what we're talking about in multiplying churches in rural and small town areas of Missouri? How are we going to seek, how are you, how are we together as a group going to be seeking to encourage people in those places?
That's a great question, Matt. The situation is, for us all to know, we've heard the word duplication over and over and over. And so we have worked hard. I've been in this role a little over a year now, and I've worked hard with Noel Oldham and Matt Mars and with the North American Mission Board so that in St. Louis, send St. Louis and send Kansas City, we are working with their process in those major cities, except for the area of multi-ethnic, because the assessment process is not there yet, and so we still have some individuals who are working, discovering multi-ethnic peoples, neighborhoods, areas within those two send cities where churches need to be begun, that Missouri Baptist will be part of it. But the vast majority of our time, of my team and our field assistants, are going to be around the rest of the state of Missouri, outside of St. Louis, outside of Kansas City, because that area is not going to be reached. Now, this is what it's going to take. In Jefferson City, Missouri, in my subdivision, Covenant Garden Subdivision, right around the corner from where I live are David and Grace. They are Nigerian. They are believers. And I got to meet them, and they let me know there are 13 Nigerian families in our subdivision. 13 Nigerian families in my subdivision. And they are not believers. Now, what we've just heard with the move into compassion is I can't live in that subdivision and personally not do something about that. And I've already talked with Dr. Yates to hold me accountable. This year, my goal is to get into those 13 Nigerian homes. And what I expect of myself, you know, I expect of you? All around our state are pockets of people that our existing churches aren't reaching for whatever the reasons are, and Ed Stetzer could clearly let us know what some of those reasons are, but we're not reaching them because we're not getting outside of ourselves and discovering them. And so what we're doing this year in our rural areas is we're having not only our guys like Ken McCune and Omar Segovia and Adam Stoddard and myself, but we have field assistants all over the states, and they are exegeting communities all around the state, in our small towns, mobile homes, different areas. They're going to discover who these peoples are. They're going to be coming and talking with our directors of missions and the pastors and convey that process of this is who you have right here that needs to be reached, to see who among your association, your region, may want to be a partnering church to go after and do a project for those peoples, with the idea that some of those will become sending churches. Because you know, North American Mission Board does not plant churches. Missouri Baptist Convention does not plant churches. Churches plant churches, right? Churches plant churches. We've had a lot of guys come through and push a button and say, I want to be a church planter, but they have no relationship with a local church to be their sending church. And so one of our desires is throughout the state is to help our bivocational churches, our rural churches, understand the process of how they can be the sending church for a church planter that they raise up with the same DNA that he as a pastor has to go into this people, reach them with the gospel for the advancement of the gospel. I want to see the day when my grandchildren grow, there are churches still there. I'm tired of driving through communities in Canada and different places where church after church are padlocked closed, are turned into art museums, or something like that. I don't want to see that happen in Missouri. Some of our churches need to be replanted because they have forgotten who the community is within whom they are located. And so that's how we want to, Matt, that's how we want to address the rest of the state. If you're outside the Sin Cities, really call us. If you as a director of missions, if you as a pastor say, there's this pocket of people, I don't even know how to do what you're saying, contact us. We will come out and do that exegesis of the community for you, with you, so that you can see that people reached with the gospel right where you are.
You want to ask?
Oh, sure. I want to ask Jim, you know, it's hard to believe I'm in my ninth year at the Missouri Baptist Convention. This is Jim's first year. In fact, he's not even been here but a couple of months at the Missouri Baptist Convention. And one of the things, coming from a multiplying church level out in Colorado, is now into developing leaders. What's the most difficult challenge you seem to be facing?
Aside from just the difficulty of being in a new position, my role has a three-pronged approach to it. The first is obviously to foster an environment where leaders are developed. Church leaders have resources where they can get better, because when a leader gets better, everybody wins. The second prong is to identify and develop and foster a culture where we develop leaders in every sphere of influence in Missouri. That's in the medical sector, the business sector, the political sector. And the third prong is to develop the staff at the Missouri Baptist Convention. And so obviously looking at all those three and knowing, you know, where do you go first, what do you work hardest on, what we know is we won't have much credibility and do well in those first two if our staff isn't developed really well. And so one of the things that we have set as a goal for 2017 is that Every one of our staff members at the NBC in 2017 will experience personal transformation through the power of the gospel in such a way that they would be inspired to invite somebody else into that same experience through a discipleship relationship with the help and involvement of their local church. And that's a challenging goal for us to achieve. I don't know if as you listened to the two Eds, because I believe two Eds are better than one as well, if you weren't broken and stunned by what they shared, we know we need to share, and we know we're equipped to share, and we don't. And when we talk about leadership, I'm afraid that in our obsession with leadership, we've taken that definition and reserved it for those that are leading organizations and leading teams, and those of us that are just trying to lead ourselves and be a disciple don't feel the compulsion that a leader feels to care for other people. And if we can inspire each other in those levels, say, I am a leader when it comes to leading myself. I am a leader when it comes to leading another person in a discipleship relationship. That compassion is what a leader starts to grow into when they're trusted with leadership. And we've got to trust leadership. We've got to push that down to our people. And so that's it. That's really the biggest challenge that I see as we work there. And we're having a really interesting time as we work toward that. I love the work that I get to do with these guys, with our staff. So that's that.
Can I just say something about Jim? In agreement with Matt, he is one of the nicest guys I know who can rip you to shreds in one of the nicest ways it could ever be, where you're saying, thank you for tearing me up inside. I didn't even know that needed to be corrected in my life. I say that to say, Jim can really help you, Pastor, if you're in a place thinking, help me discover who I am as a leader and where my weak spots are. I've already said to Jim, I look forward to you really doing that, saying, this is what you see in me. Because 60-year-olds don't want to change. I want to change every day of my life. So Jim's good at that.
Thank you, Rick. You're one of the most encouraging guys I know, and you're the most excited 60-year-old I've met. So,
other than Doc.
Great. Well, while we get to be up here, a lot of you are doing a great job developing our church leaders and other leaders, and you've got good systems and networks. If you have one of those that's working really well, or you're in one of those that's really changing you in a good way, please let me or Gary Mathis or Dwayne Carter know. We're mapping the state for those networks and those leader developing systems, because we run into leaders all the time that say, I need one of those, and we would love to connect them to your network or your system if you're doing something like that. So thanks for letting me ask for that. I got a question. All of our roles are new, but your role is new as the Making Disciples Catalyst. And in the past, Missouri Baptists have had a person specifically focused on encouraging and equipping people for evangelism. And I guess the question would be, now going forward, without that, what is the priority for this new position in light of that?
Yeah, I think I want to make it really clear that we are not de-emphasizing evangelism. I want it to be abundantly clear that, in fact, we're elevating the priority of evangelism by talking about the mission that God has given to all followers of Jesus. What I would submit is that we have some unlearning to do, because in many ways, some of the things that all of these guys have talked about today, and I know you think I put them all up to it, and I didn't, but I told them the theme and where we have been, and just trust the Lord to speak to us. I think there are many habits that have become doctrines that we may not be able to trace back to scriptural principles. And those things are hard to unlearn and then relearn the biblical definition and understanding of making disciples. And so we're making an attempt to make sure we're all on the same page when it comes to the language that we use and the things that we talk about. And then to find places where it's okay for us to talk about that together. You know, current systems are achieving for us our current results. And if we maintain the same systems and we lament the results of the same system, then that, right, is the age-old definition of insanity. And so something is going to have to change. And I believe it begins with us maybe taking a step back, agreeing with the fact that Jesus laid out a very clear plan and didn't do anything on accident and wanted us to do exactly the same thing, principally speaking. And so that's a part of what we're trying to do. And ultimately, I believe if we're not making disciples who make disciples, then we may not be making disciples in the first place. Because inherent in the definition of making a disciple is multiplication. If we've gotten off course and we have emphasized conversion to such a degree that the convert has not understood what it means to be a follower of Jesus, then it's time for us to unlearn that definition of being a follower of Jesus and relearn the biblical definition of being a follower of Jesus. That's a tough thing. It requires even a change in our systems because our systems are now developed to help facilitate what we have been doing in evangelism. And it may mean we have to relook at how we do these things. It may seem like a contradiction for me to do what I'm going to do next, but a part of what I feel like we want to do is to provide as many resources as we possibly can. And I don't think Dr. Reed, I've been around Ed enough to know, I think I would share a heart with Ed Litton as well, is we're not saying or suggesting throw all these things away, burn all of the resources that we've ever used, abandon all of the practices that we've had. They're all bad and sinful. I don't think that's the case at all. But I think where we've had an incomplete understanding of what it means to make disciples that doesn't ultimately result in us developing the next generation who make disciples, that doesn't result in new work in places where we're not currently reaching people that results in church multiplication, then I think we have to come all the way back to the beginning and saying maybe we misunderstood what it means to make disciples. So that's how all of this kind of fits together. Now, I'm a long-term Southern Baptist too, not as long as some of the other testimonies today, but I was born and raised in Festus, Missouri. I gave my life to Jesus at Faith Baptist Church. I was a sunbeam and a what else was I? RA. I was an RA, certainly. Mission friend. I was a GA, practically. I'm an honorary member of the ACT Teens, for Pete's sake, because my mom was at every WM meeting that we had, and so I was there too. All of those things, I say with great affection, have contributed to me being who I am today and having the understanding that I have. But to push it a little bit further, some of the techniques that I learned, some of the short circuits around really making an investment and being connected relationally and doing the hard work. And I learned a lot of short circuits. Ed and I first met, I think, at the North American Mission Board 100 years ago. I sat on a committee. I was invited to be on a committee to help us develop a 60-second witnessing tool. Now listen, I'm all for that. But when the most that we ever give to sharing the good news of the gospel is 60 seconds, then I think we've misunderstood what Jesus was asking us to do in the first place. And so can we consider some other options, or where our definition is incomplete, can we come back to what Jesus did with the disciples? I hope that's not controversial, doing what Jesus did with the disciples. A part of what we wanted to do here was help frame a little bit of what we're doing and see how these things work together. And then we're thinking all the time about how to better equip, how to provide the resources that are necessary. And as you have ideas about that, we certainly want you to ask about those, however we might be able to assist. I don't think that going back to my NAM days, I think it's unfortunate that the reputation of North American Mission Board employees when I first went there and of Missouri Baptist Convention employees, it was kind of a joke that we were people who never went to church, weren't a part of any active fellowship, and yet traveled all over the place explaining to other people how to be and make disciples. And to be honest with you, I just kind of regret that, because I feel like if I'm not personally engaged in being and making disciples, then I shouldn't be talking to other people about being and making disciples. And I think a part of what was most convicting to me today, as Ed was sharing, was just the Lord revealing to me one person in the past week who I know beyond a shadow of a doubt I was already supposed to have gone to, and I made an excuse not to. And I got to make that right, and I intend to. But that's a part of the reason why we do things like this, I hope, as well, to serve as an encouragement, not a discouragement.